You are listening to KFAI 90.3 in Minneapolis and St. Paul and online at kfai.org.
Welcome to Let's Ride, a podcast about the bicycling lifestyle and interviewing cool people with cool stories to tell about bikes. I'm here with my co-host Patrick. I'm Emily. And today we have Cato Bowles-Roth, co-founder and executive director of Twin Cities Adaptive Cycling with us.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Welcome
to
the show.
We're happy to have you.
Thank you.
So, question: what is your bicycling origin story? When did you first fall in love with bikes, Cato?
Oh, I would say, let's see.
You got it.
Well, I used to have. I remember when I was about 6 or 7, I my parents bought me an old used yellow banana seat bicycle, and I used to ride it around where my parents have a place outside of Red Wing with all gravel roads, and I used to just roll around with all the neighborhood kids. It was a lot of fun.
I hear there was a lot of gravel there too. The gravel of Red
Lots
Wing?
Of gravel.
You were talking about the gravel in Red Wing?
Yeah, outside of Red Wing, on the old gravel road. So it was fun to just, you know, bop around on the bike. And
would you say that you started the gravel trend before it became popular?
Probably, yeah.
Kato's such a trendsetter.
So. I am.
At the age of 5.
Yes. Oh, yes.
The king of gravel. So the reason we have you here today is that we want to talk to you about Twin Cities Adaptive Cycling, which you co-founded and are the executive director of. Can you tell us a little bit about this organization?
I would love to.
Let's do it.
So Twin Cities Adaptive Cycling, also known as TCAC, is a community-based...
No.
Not TCAC, TCAC. We're a community-based adaptive bike share program for youth and adults with disabilities. We are located on the Midtown Greenway in South Minneapolis. For those of you that don't know the Midtown Greenway, it's a... former railroad corridor that's now a shared bicycle pedestrian path. It's pretty flat and runs kind of through the heart of South Minneapolis and connects all sorts of trails from the Mississippi River to the Chain of Lakes in Minneapolis. So really grateful to be located right on the trail there. So our program serves a wide variety of individuals with various disabilities and various ages. So our youngest rider is 6, our oldest is 95. We are open 4 days a week, and we offer custom kind of one-on-one individualized adaptive bike fittings for those who are new riders for us. And then for returning riders, we offer low-cost equipment use and bike rentals, essentially, education, training on how to use the adaptive bikes, and then we also offer volunteer sighted tandem pilots for those individuals who want to ride and are blind and need a partner to ride with.
So cool.
So cool.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
So glad that it's in Minneapolis. Can you talk about why you co-founded this nonprofit and why you wanted to have it in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love to bike more than anything.
Yeah.
And for many reasons. But I feel that pretty strongly that not everybody has equal access to biking. And particularly those with disabilities have a lot of barriers in their way to participating in biking. One of the main ones is cost. You know, you talk about some of my early memories of biking, you know, from the banana seat bike that we bought at a garage sale to then being broke in, 18, 19. Well, I'm still broke, but... you know, I can go to a garage sale and buy a Schwinn for $25 and take it to a buddy that's a bike mechanic that can fix it up. If you're a person with a spinal cord injury and you need a hand cycle, you know, you're kind of shit out of luck.
Right.
Because you've got to put up,
mm-hmm.
you know, typically $1,800 to $2,800 to get an adaptive bike. And that's just the bike. And then you need other equipment with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe you get the bike, but how do you get the bike to the world class trail.
Right, right. Have,
yeah. So you then know, a carrier for a hand cycle on your car, and yep. you can't take that bike on the bus bike rack.
Right, right.
For two wheeled bikes.
Yep. So cost and transportation, and then storage. You know, if you live in a small apartment, mm-hmm. these bikes are pretty big and take up a lot of room. So those are some of the big yeah. barriers that I think exist and, you know, discourage people from even wanting to try to ride a bike if they can't ride a two-wheel bike. So that was really the motivation to start the program. How can we create something here that allows people to ride regularly, is convenient, and gets them out on the trails? So
how did it all start?
So TCAZ was founded in 2017. We kind of launched our pilot program in June of 2017, so 2 years ago. Prior to that opening, I was working as a cycling assistant in one of the largest cycling programs for people with disabilities out in Oakland, called Bay Area Outreach and Recreation Program. And I began there as a volunteer in 2013 and had a background. I'm an occupational therapist by background, so had worked with people with disabilities, but always been interested in community work. And actually 2014, I see Emily doing some math over there. 2014, I believe, is when I started working there. Yeah. But anyways, so I had a background of working with individuals with disabilities, loved biking, and found this really rad program in Oakland that, you know, had 100+ adaptive bikes in this, right on the trail, right on the aquatic park area. And contacted them right away and said, how can I get involved? And started as a volunteer there. And I vividly remember that first day walking in and seeing it and just seeing how transformative it was for so many people there, that I knew I had to start something like this in Minneapolis, where I'm from. Yeah. So yeah, that's awesome. Kind of the story of how it was.
That's so cool. It seems like a really unique type of program. Are there, other than in the Bay Area, are there other examples of where this is being done in the U.S.?
Yeah, there are. I would say predominantly they're on the West Coast because they get a little bit of a longer bike riding season. So there's the one in the Bay Area. Then there's one in Seattle called Outdoors for All. And then there's a handful around kind of all over Colorado. So a lot of those are, you know, might specifically focus on adaptive mountain biking or those kinds of things. And then there are a couple, there's an adaptive bike share program in Portland through the, you know, actual private bike share program. And then there's also one in Detroit. And then a couple on the East Coast kind of sprinkled throughout, but they're definitely starting to pop up more. They're starting to be tied in with the actual larger bike share programs that the cities have.
Oh, that's
which
cool.
is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you describe what these bikes actually look like?
Yeah.
What's the appearance of them? What are their functions?
Yeah. So, a hand cycle, as the name implies, is a bike that you, pedal with your hands. They come in a couple different variations, but, you actually use kind of both hands at kind of above chest level, and you use both of your arms to pedal forward, to propel you forward, as opposed to kind of that.
Where you're switching pressure being put down on your pedals.
Some of them like that, but predominantly. So it's got two wheels in the back and one in the front. And you can either have like a chair, your chair is either at 90 degree angle, so you're kind of upright, but you're pretty low to the ground still. Or you can be in kind of a more swoop back position, so a little bit more recumbent. And those are for people who race and want to go really fast. And then we've got a couple different kinds of recumbent foot trikes. So you've got two kinds. You've got a tadpole, which is two wheels in the front and one in the back. And your steering is down at your hips. The tadpoles are a little tighter, more compact. And then you've got deltas, which are one wheel on the front, two in the back, steering's at your hips, gearing, all that same thing is at your hips. And then from there, there's, you know, all sorts of modifications that can be made on the bike. So that's a big part of our jobs when we do, when I do adaptive bike fittings for someone that's new. I usually spend about an hour with them trying to determine not only what bike is the right bike for them, but then how can we enhance how they're interacting with that bike so that they can, you know, be as independent as possible. So sometimes, for example, you know, if somebody who doesn't have the use of the right side of their body because they had a stroke, we have a lot of bikes that have all the controls on the left-hand side. Maybe they can use their right hand, but they have some weakness and they don't have much grasp. We can, and they still want to use their right arm. We can, we have all sorts of different types of equipment that we can build up the shifter so they can use the gross movement of their hand to interact with it. So there's all sorts of different variations.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's so super amazing.
And so you're entering into your third season, is
third
that right?
Season,
third season.
Yeah.
And what has the demand been like?
The demand has been unbelievable. It's been great. It's been, I mean, I knew there was going to be a demand here. I knew it,
yeah.
You know. Everybody wants to bike.
Yeah.
And we've got
yes.
so many great trails in Minneapolis, too, and St. Paul, all over. So the first season that we launched, 2017, we kind of slowly rolled out. We were open 2 days a week, you know, bringing all our bikes, strapping them to the landscaping trailer and the top of the car and just doing whatever we needed to do to kind of have a pop-up shop. Yeah. So we started with the five bikes, and we were open 2 days a week. And for the whole season from June until the 1st of October, we served a total of 40 riders. So we were, you know, we were excited about that. I kind of had in my mind, you know, let's try and serve 50 people this year. We're not doing much marketing. We don't have any money. You know, we're kind of just getting our feet wet with, like, figuring out all the logistics of, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, so figuring out that. And
that stuff is tough.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and then also
in addition to running
to
the program.
Do that, and then also, like, you know, working full time and
moving
other jobs.
Across the country.
Yeah, so some other things. So we were just trying to, you know, land on solid ground. And we actually did a group ride through the Nicollet Open Streets,
yeah.
which is a big, for those of you who aren't familiar with Open Streets, it's a big kind of festival where they close down several miles of, you know, usually high traffic streets, and they shut it down so pedestrians and bikes can kind of hang out, and it's a fun street festival. So anyways, we did this big group ride with Courage Kenny. It's another organization here that does group rides one night a week with adaptive bikes, and the response from that was huge, and that was within the last week of our season, right? And so all of a sudden, we just got flooded with phone calls, and we were out there in the community and a little bit more exposed. So we were excited about that momentum. Then last year, we ended up serving 120 riders, so up from 40.
Wow.
And that was actually by August 1st. So we started on May 1st, and by August 1st, we had served 120 different individuals. And we had to go on a wait list because we were starting to, you know, I'm the only staff there. And then we try and pull as many volunteers as we can once we get them trained. And so it was great. It was huge. But we had to make the decision to go on a wait list because we were averaging, at the point we went on a wait list, we were averaging 24 riders a day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
And so it was most of them, you know, of those, we usually would have like 4 to 6 that were new, and then the rest would be returning riders.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. It was a lot of growth really fast. And so we, and then we facilitated a total of 430 bike rides all last year.
Awesome.
So we're really excited about that. We ended up having, you know, over 40 people on our wait list. So I'm working hard right now on trying to get all those people fitted in the month of May.
Mm-hmm.
So we have specific dates set aside to do fittings for people. So we're starting that this week because we got rained out last week.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So, I looked at your website and I saw there was a video where someone talked about, like, imagine your favorite thing, like biking is your favorite thing, and then all of a sudden you just can't do it anymore, and how heartbreaking that would be. Yeah. And that's kind of something you're giving back to people with this work you're doing. That's such a cool thing. What is the most amazing story you've seen, or like just in these past couple years, like what's the most amazing excited rider you've seen?
Oh, that's a hard one. It's a lot.
What's your There's top three?
There's a lot
three?
Of days. Yeah, the top three. Now, there are a lot of days when we do these fittings and we all, myself and the volunteers, we all kind of, people that wouldn't consider themselves emotional, you know, we're all leaving there. We're all witnessing it, kind of crying. Because, yeah, it's just, it's amazing. I hope you all can come down and get to experience it too. Top three stories. Oof. Okay, I got a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
We have one of our young riders. He came to us last year in June. His dad reached out to us and said, "My son is he's 15. You know, he's in high school, and he's been diagnosed with he had some sort of what they thought was Lyme's disease. Kind of all sorts of they didn't have a straight diagnosis, but he hadn't been able to walk anymore. He lost a ton of weight. He's a tall guy. He's like 6 feet, you know. And he was just, he was out of school. He wasn't going to school. He just was sick, not doing well. And then, of course, to be experiencing that at that age, too, when we're going through our adolescence. Mm. So he loved to ride bikes. And his dad said that's the thing. He's so weak now, you know, he uses these walking sticks to walk, and he can hardly walk. But we think if we can get him on a bike, he can start to build some strength. And that's what he loved to do. So do you know anybody that can help us? I said, well, yeah, we can, you know, and they live in Stillwater. So he said, I'll drive up. We'll drive up, and like, I can kind of picture the bike you're talking about, but we'll drive up and kind of see our options. So they came up, we got him on a bike. They probably went, we got him on one of the tadpoles. So the bikes with the two wheels in the front, one mm-hmm. in the back, they probably went like, you know, two blocks total. But he was able to do it independently. And I got a call then the next day that said, can you put us down for Thursday? Cause we're going to be back. So this was Tuesday. And then can you put us back for Saturday? And then they started driving up like every day from Stillwater that we were open. And then by the end of the year, so this was June, right? So by the end of the season last year, the first week of October, his dad pulls up and I didn't see Braden. I said, where's Braden? And he said, he's in the car, but he wants to show you something. So just stand right there, and can you see the car? I said, yeah. And so Braden came out of the car and just walked without any of the walking sticks and said,
amazing.
And said, you know, I'm doing this because I've been biking all summer.
Yeah.
There hasn't been anything I've been able to do that I've been able to, like, exercise and do this. And so,
yeah. Building
strength and especially to have him get that confidence back as like a 16-year-old that's already grappling with that, you know, at that age. So super cool. But yeah, that's just one of the many stories that often goes like that.
That definitely deserves like top three status.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I don't know the rest of the stories, but that's a top one.
You made a comment that you hope we can come down and see for ourselves. Can you explain what it would maybe be like if Patrick were to show up and want to volunteer one day?
Yeah.
Like what would his experience, what would he maybe be tasked with doing, and what are the types of people that he would maybe get to interact with?
Yeah, so we have volunteers that kind of come from all backgrounds. We have a lot of people that, well, since you're a cyclist, I'd probably ask you to be a tandem pilot.
Yeah.
But people get a little bit nervous when we ask them that, right? Because myself included, I don't like to captain a two-wheel tandem. But our bikes are three-wheeled. So it's great. You can link up those Delta bikes I was talking about with the two wheels in the back and the one in the front. There's actually a tandem hitch that's like a custom piece of equipment that you can essentially weld to the back of one of the frames, and then you can pop the front wheel off another bike and then link them up. And so most of our riders who are blind or have a traumatic brain injury or had a stroke and have kind of like a visual deficit or a field cut, whatever it might be that they need somebody else to accompany them to ride. I would probably throw you in that tandem seat and the pilot and send you out. But I provide some training with that for sure.
Yeah.
But so the back seat gets the steering gets disengaged. So that person is strictly just pedaling and they're able to change the gears, but you'd be the leader because you could you could steer.
Quick story. My spouse and I have volunteered with Twin Cities Adaptive Cycling before, and he was a tandem co-pilot, and he went out with an individual who was blind. And when he came back, I had been volunteering in the parking lot with Cato, and I was like, how was the ride? And he said that it was amazing because he experienced riding this trail that he's ridden dozens of times in an entirely new way. Him and this other rider were able to communicate using a microphone headset, so they could talk during the ride, and Hunter would tell him what he was looking at, and his co-rider would tell Hunter what he smelled, and these were things that Hunter wasn't smelling, and what he heard, and these were things that Hunter wasn't hearing, and he's so excited to get back down and ride
again. Awesome.
Yeah.
Super cool. We talked about outside the studio about the freedom of riding and how powerful that is. Mm-hmm. And that's like what a gift for someone to experience that again for the first time. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so many individuals with, mobility impairments who are confined to a wheelchair can actually move their body when they're on a bike. I think that's hard for people to kind of visualize or understand. You know, we've had multiple kind of passerbys say, I don't understand this person that just showed up in the wheelchair. You're going to get them in a bike. Is that safe? Can you do that? You know, so we're trying to also change those stereotypes too of that for sure.
It seems like being on the Midtown Greenway is probably one of the best ways to inspire culture change around who rides a bike and what a bike looks like. Like Kato was saying earlier, the Midtown Greenway is this huge artery trail that connects to all of the other trails in the region. And it sees, on a 75 degree sunny day in the Twin Cities, thousands of riders, I would guess. So it's awesome that you guys are headquartered right there where everyone who passes by sees you and hopefully thinks about, who rides a bike and what a bike looks like.
Yeah, that would be a total perception shift. Like, that's basically, like, in terms of bike culture, that's like like TGI at mainstream television. Like, basically you see everyone on that trail, like commuters, roadies, like everyone's on there.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like where everybody comes together to get around Minneapolis.
And it's great that the perception of what a bike is in general starting to change. We're seeing bikes with really big tires and really small wheels and bikes with electric assist. And so it seems like it's a really good time to be seeing adaptive bikes on the trail too.
Ooh, that actually makes me think of something. Does electric assist play into any of this at all? Is that a part
of
it?
We don't have any electric assist yet, no.
Yeah.
They do, it definitely could benefit some of our riders, but we kind of do the old school way with the electric assist of just pairing them up with somebody. So the human powered assist, I guess.
Sure.
For the riders that, don't have much endurance or want to go a little longer. We also have a bike that's called a side-by-side or quadrubent. So it's got four wheels and you can sit next to each other and talk.
Yeah, that's a sociable, isn't it?
Yeah, sociable.
Yeah, the sociable. Like sociable cider.
Yeah.
That's a cidery in town that's named after that kind of bike. Yeah. All right, everybody's thirsty. So we're going to go have a drink of water and take a little bit of break and listen to some good music. Also known as the Let's Ride theme song. We'll see you in a couple minutes.
You are listening to KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and streaming online at kfai.org. Now back to Let's Ride.
Welcome back. I'm Emily. I'm here with my co-host, Patrick, and we are talking to Cato Bolesroth, co-founder and executive director of Twin Cities Adaptive Cycling. So just jumping back into things, one thing, Cato, that Patrick and I are trying to be really intentional about is making sure that as we hear all these amazing stories of great things in the bicycling world happening in Minneapolis, the Twin Cities, and in Minnesota, making sure that we gather some tips, some, Patrick, what do you call it?
Transportable tips. That's the segment of the show now. Transportable tips.
Transportable tips.
Yep.
That some of our listeners can take back to their communities if they want to maybe start something similar to your organization, Cato. So what would be maybe one or two things that you would urge someone to think about if they wanted to start an adaptive cycling bike nonprofit bike share program in their community?
Yeah, good question, Emily. I would say right away, check out what's going on in your community. So are there any groups, organizations doing something that is somewhat similar that you could maybe be a facet of or an extension of? If not, start building something from the ground up.
Like you.
Start from zero.
Start from zero.
Get a trailer.
Like a hero.
Halfway
yeah,
across the
I
country.
Think, I mean, I urge people to see what's going on in their community to do that partnership strictly so that, you know, the funding is what can remain constant. I think that's the biggest battle. You know, you can start something like this in your community and you want to see it continue to grow and flourish, but nonprofits are always, you know, trying to keep up with funding and keep their ideas moving yeah. forward. So that would be the big thing. But otherwise, I always tell people you need four bikes to start an adaptive bike program. Mm. So you need a tandem, you need a hand cycle, and then you need two different types of recumbent foot bikes. And that's going to cover pretty much all your bases. And then you can just start to door knock and start to organize and get people in your community behind you and volunteering with you and be okay with not making some money for a while.
So it's okay to start small. You don't have to have a fleet of 40 bikes.
Exactly,
to begin
with. Exactly. Yeah. So I think, again, if you have those bikes that I mentioned, you can cover a lot of bases. And if one of them can be a youth bike, then you can cover a pretty wide range of mm-hmm. ages as well.
Thank you for being so prescriptive with that. Yeah. I love that it's like, check and see what community-based organizations are already there. And if there's yep. nothing, these are the four bikes you need to get.
Yep. Case the joint.
Yeah.
Start from zero.
And also one of the big things too is find out where there's a parking lot space that's paved.
Yeah.
Is the ideal location. That's of course maybe not being used or a section of it, and that's in close proximity to a bike trail. Because then you've got an area where you can stage the bikes. You've got a protected area in that parking lot, if you can cone it off, where you can have people get comfortable with the bikes before they go out on a trail.
Mm-hmm.
But also being close to the trail is important because a lot of these bikes are very low to the ground. They're not very visible on city streets. So mm-hmm. it's important to try and find a trail that you can operate nearby.
Good tips.
Yeah. So, Cato, we've introduced you now twice as co-founder of Twin Cities Adaptive Cycling, and I just gotta ask, tell us about your other co-founder.
So the other co-founder's name is Tommy Dixon, and he and I were volunteering together at the organization that I mentioned earlier in the Bay Area. So Tommy brings many years of bike mechanic skills to the table for our organization, so we're really grateful to have him as part of this too.
And he happens to be your husband, right?
He happens to be my husband.
She's blushing.
Happens to be your husband. So did you two meet and fall in love as a result of this shared passion? Is our show going there?
Not long after we met. Not long after we met. Yeah, but I think, you know, Tommy was a bike messenger in San Francisco for a number of years, and then raced road bikes and has always been very bicycle oriented and lived his life that way. But I think it's been good for him to find, for both of us to combine our passions and love for something that we're, you know, we're giving something back to the community. So that, yeah. That I think we, you know, we began this journey not long after we met. So yeah, you could say in a way we did.
Yeah. It seems like such a good melding of your two skills. Like you said, like a fusion of your history as an occupational therapist and his passion for bikes, and you have a passion for bikes too.
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
just
yeah.
brings them both together into one package.
Yeah.
I have to ask this question about personal challenges you faced along the way. Like, for example, has it been really hard to manage an organization with your spouse? Or, like, how have you grown as a result of doing this work?
That's a good question.
And what are some pitfalls that you've faced?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, I worked on this idea came many years ago, and so I feel like I've been working on the project for a long time. So actually seeing it in fruition now is, it kind of blows my mind that it's happening and that we're on the ground doing it. I think, you know, I remember when I was telling my mentor and former boss, Greg, that I wanted to do this, and he said, before you file that paperwork to start a nonprofit, you know that this is going to be the hardest thing that you'll ever do in your life if you're going to go that route. So try as hard as you can to find somebody to partner with. And it just wasn't an option for us here. So I do, I see that now that I'm in it. I think, you know, I think the biggest challenge has been just juggling other jobs to try to see this through and being okay with being a volunteer for a while to get the program going. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Tommy still is a volunteer for us. I just moved into a semi-paid position. It's kind
nice.
Of a supplemental income.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I still work some other side gigs. So that's been a challenge. I feel like we've had to, I feel like, yeah, as a couple then, we've both had to make the sacrifices financially for the organization. But I think at the end of the day, it just doesn't faze us because we love what we're doing and believe wholeheartedly in it. So
yeah, that mm-hmm. passion can get you through a lot.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
So I love that you talk about your program as being a bike share program. And it's interesting, you mentioned sustainable funding, and in my head, I'm thinking about how bike share is changing so rapidly. And now, you know, we see what once were community-based bike share programs being owned by Lyft and Uber. And I'm just curious to know your thoughts on, like, community-based program versus these huge mega mobility for-profit industry players. And how do you see Twin Cities Adaptive Cycling maybe changing or growing with the bike share industry?
Yeah, this is another good question. Because I think it's relevant now, right? We've got now, as of Saturday, we have three different cities in the country that are backed by Lyft that are launching adaptive cycling shares. So I'm excited about that because people listen when a lot of the general public. I just think it's important to get the word out about mm-hmm. what an adaptive bike share looks like. Because it looks very different than a traditional bike share program. Because you've got to have programming along with it, right? You've got to have a model like ours. It's not just a dock or a dockless bike that's there. So I think in that regards, and they have the funding for it. So the sustainability piece of that and just the volume that they could serve, I'm excited about that. I think it would be really great. I do support something like that happening here. I think that you need an organization like ours to shepherd something like that in because
yeah,
we
yeah.
have the knowledge. There's kind of a limited amount of people in this country who have a lot of knowledge and expertise with adaptive cycling. So I think it remains very important that Uber and Lyft partner with those organizations and those people that have those skills so that they can do it right. And
But yeah, it's your organization's never going to function the way that a bike share system like Nice Ride functions. It sounds like there are riders who need assistance getting onto a bike, mm-hmm. and you don't have people just standing around waiting at the, you know, stations, the Nice Ride stations, to help with that. And so you need to have that community-based programmatic side too.
And that specialized knowledge too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we're so lucky to have you here.
Yeah, for real. So you mentioned how fast the organization has grown, just even from its first year to last year. Where do you see it going this year? Is it that kind of growth going to continue to happen? And then where do you see it in like 5 years?
So this year, we're really trying to get enough volunteers trained up so that we can serve more people. The more volunteers, the more positions we have, the more people we're going to be able to serve. So, I mean, the goal is that we can serve whatever the demand is. So if the demand is 30 or 40 riders a day, I want to be able to handle that volume and do that. So we're not quite at a place where we can do that. And I think we need, you know, I mean, to handle that kind of volume, we need at least 5 volunteers and a mechanic down on site. So the goal is now to train. My goal is to train 30 volunteers in this season. So we had a volunteer training recently. We had that full 30 people in attendance, and most of them have followed through. So we're working hard on getting people trained in. So in terms of, you know, immediate goals, that's the goal for this year, so that we can just keep serving more and more mm-hmm. people that want to ride. Going forward, I would love to see more. I would love to see TCAC in an educational role and kind of a consultation role around communities in Minnesota, so that people, for example, the story I told earlier about the young man driving from Stillwater. Mm-hmm. And we have people drive from Hastings and other places around too, because this isn't happening in their communities. And so if we could train communities on how to do that and have kind of, I mean, whether that looks like satellite programs around the state or just being that leader in providing education and training on how to do this, that's the goal. And then, of course, my ultimate goal is to have this word spread around the world so that we can have programs everywhere and everyone can have access to cycling.
For sure. And then cool. just meaningful things like that continue to happen. More and more stories. More and more freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Biking is amazing. And
it is like, amazing.
Yeah. You're doing an awesome thing.
Thank you. For our listeners who are in the Twin Cities area, can you tell them how they could get involved?
Absolutely. So we're always looking for volunteers on the ground, behind the scenes. If you're interested in learning more about the roles that we have, you can visit our website, tcacycling.org. And we have a volunteer tab there where you can find out more about the different roles you can play. So as I mentioned earlier, we were talking about the hypothetical role that Patrick could play.
I want to do it.
Maybe on
Saturday.
You could be a tandem pilot. We also have people who come to us that don't really have much experience with biking, but they know, I mean, they might love biking themselves and they know the independence and freedom it provides them. So we do some training on hand, you know, in terms of teaching people about how to make adjustments on bikes. But just as much as we need tandem pilots, we need people who have strong people skills and can get people checked in and make them feel comfortable. You know, most of our riders, it's the first time they're getting on a bike, an adaptive bike, and the first time they're doing it since an injury or an accident that happened recently. So it's can be a really scary experience. So it's important to create that safe space. So we're always looking for individuals to help out. So again, www.tcacycling.org. Check out the volunteer page there, and it's got a place where you can submit an application.
Nice. Okay, I have one last question.
Yeah.
For your own personal biking, what's one ride you're looking forward to in the coming months?
Ooh.
Oh, that's kind of a painful question because the Kenilworth Trail just closed. That piece of it, that is my favorite ride in the city, that kind of loop around there.
Closed for a good reason.
Yep.
It is.
Extension
it is.
Of light
it
rails,
yep.
but
it's going to be awesome.
Still
could be better,
bummer.
But it's going to be awesome.
I have not done the Grand Rounds. ride, which is a ride that kind of connects all the trails in Minneapolis, and I'm going to do that this year, so I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. That's a good one. Well, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much, and thank you for all of the work you're doing around making bicycling more accessible to everyone.
Dig it.
Thanks for having me.
Fist pound. That we just created a tradition now. Fist pound to end the show. Let's ride. This show has been a long time in coming, but we finally made it happen after 2 years. Yeah, Emily. We have some thank yous to do. So we want to thank our guest, Cato Bowles-Roth. Thanks for coming on the show today. Thank our producer, Luke Peterson, who's here helping us make this happen, is very patient with two goofballs. Our founding producer, Chris Roberts, who also made the theme song. And also, of course, KFAI, who let us into their studio to record a show. KFAI.org.